Today on The Dark Side of, an independent review, faults the Moab police for unintentional mistakes in the Gabby Petito case. Body of a missing Florida man, a hero of the state's LGBTQ rights movement, is discovered in a landfill. A Texas girl's abduction inspired a life-saving Amber Alert, but 26 years later, her own case yet to be solved.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of.
And indeed it is. Welcome to the program. Press subscribe wherever you download a podcast so you don't miss any of our episodes. And if you really like the show, check us out on Patreon, patreon.com, and search Dark Side of, or go to darksidepod.com. Tony and Carol with you in today's episode of the program. And what's going on?
Well, I heard something today that you probably heard too.
What?
But the whole Elizabeth Holmes trial, they set her sentencing date for September.
Oh, God.
Like, that? What? Like, how can you be found guilty on something and you get to wait 8.5 months before your sentence? Like, you're just out.
Well, it's, they're in prison, right? Like, she's in prison too.
No, she's not.
Oh, she's not.
No.
Oh, I thought they were like locked up until then.
No, not sometimes they are.
So she's
but
not.
But I heard on NPR today that she was at home and it's a multi-million dollar estate that she's staying at.
Well, she's going to dig a tunnel into the middle of the world and escape.
You know, and I don't know. That would, I mean, it'd be kind of a relief. Whew, I don't have to go to prison for 8 months. But I mean, I think it's a sad situation because she does have a child.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would be a lot. Every day you would wake up knowing you're one day closer to giving up your entire life.
I don't know. Like, I don't.
That would be kind of torture.
I think it'd be probably one of those things where after a couple of days it would set in. It's one of those things where you look at if you've never been through it and then you go through it, but on the outside, you're like, I don't know how I would ever handle that, how I would go through that. And then if you go through it, you're like, okay, I get it. Like, it's not the end of the world. It was horrible, but I found my way through it. And that's probably one of those things like that where you just, after you know it's coming, you just kind of, you make peace with it mentally.
Accept it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean,
it'd be one thing, like, at my age, I have no kids. It would be hard enough to leave my pets, but to leave your child.
Yeah, I don't know how the fuck you do that.
That would be tough. So I did feel kind of sorry for her, in a way.
Yeah.
But then when I heard that today, I'm like, that makes no sense to me.
I think she's a narcissist that had a child as in a possible escape chute. Without regard to if the child excuse did not work, which it did not work. And now the child's going to be the victim of this. But I think she just basically tried to have a child to try and convince the jury that, look, just let her, you know, she was young and she was doing this. And a lot of people in that area, they do that. And it's true. There's a lot of people who pitch the same sort of shit who have not been tried like her. And so I think there is a level of, I don't know what it would be, a prejudice, I don't know, but injustice, it is kind of bullshit that she's the one that was made the example of when there's just a gazillion fucking people who've done the same sort of shit. It worked out in many cases, in many it did not, but it didn't affect people's fucking healthcare. The fact that it affected people's healthcare is what made this thing such a big thing. But it affected, there's many other people who were affected, their life savings, you know, millions of dollars gone. In other scenarios.
Sorry, I can't concentrate. I keep thinking of Kevin Costner and Yellowstone. And your voice.
Telling you. Rip.
Casey.
Rip. Casey. Casey.
Now, Beth.
Beth, I think it might be good time for you to get off the farm.
Sorry.
It would be a good time.
You were talking and I was just seeing Kevin Costner, which is a nice vision. Yeah. I mean, he's still a very handsome man.
Rip, you and Casey, I want you two to get together. I want you to run the farm together as lovers. But I don't care. That's what I want.
Jamie can be your slave. I didn't say it right. Jamie can be your slave boy. I sound like a really perv.
Jamie can be your slave boy. All right. Now go. Go. Go to the bunkhouse. Yeah. That's a weird twist that Yellowstone goes in season 5. A weird, controversial, horrible, horrible twist.
Like every episode, there's a horrible twist. Yeah. Oh, anyways.
Anyways, let's go to our first story of the day. And this will be talking about the Gabby Petito case and some of the faults that have been claimed to have been made in it. I'm just pulling it up right over here. This one comes to us from People. Independent review faults Moab police for unintentional mistakes in the Gabby Petito case. The city of Moab, Utah has released the findings of an independent investigation into the August 12th domestic dispute between Gabby Petito and Brian Landry, suggesting that the two responding officers made mistakes and should be placed on probation. Wednesday, the city issued a 100-page report conducted by Captain Brandon Ratcliffe of the Price City Police Department after a formal complaint was filed with the Moab Police Department on how Moab police officers Eric Pratt and Daniel Robbins handled the situation. Officers Pratt and Robbins did not immediately respond to people's requests for comment. The independent agency's investigative report finds that the officers who responded to the incident made several unintentional mistakes that stemmed from the fact that the officers failed to cite Ms. Petito for domestic violence, the statement said. Per recommendations of the report, the city said that it will set up its training for the Moab City Police Department on domestic violence investigations and its review process for incident reports along other areas. The city of Moab sends our sincere condolences to the Petito family. Our hearts, go out to them as they continue to deal with the tragic loss of their daughter, the statement said. I think the translation there is, please don't fucking sue us. To study the situation, Ratcliffe reviewed body camera footage to return Pratt and Robbins' conversations with Petito, 22, and Landry, 23, on August 12th. That morning, someone called police after the couple appeared to argue outside a food cooperative called Moonflower, and authorities pulled them over a short time later. Per the report, Robbins approached the vehicle, immediately separating Petito and Landry before interviewing them about the alleged altercation. We've just been fighting this morning, some personal issues, Petito explained through tears. She then told police that she had become frustrated with Landry earlier in the day. During his interview, Landry said that once Petito became frustrated, he locked the doors to the van and suggested they go on a walk to cool off. When the officer asked Landry about scratches on his face and neck, he replied, "She had her phone and was trying to get her keys from me." I said, "Let's just step back and breathe," and she got me with her phone. A couple agreed to separate for the night, and Petito kept the van while Landry headed to a hotel. That's a weird part to me. Is that not weird to you?
Well, considering it was her vehicle.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like there's something weird about that. Just as a guy, if you give a shit about the woman that you're with, even if you have a disagreement, you're like, let's cool off. Let's do this or that. I think the thought would be, okay, let's not have the single white woman laying in the van in the parking lot. I would think, go, please, have the hotel room. I will do the van. That I don't know. I don't know why that to me is just a, I don't get it. I don't get it. But
well, I just think it's weird, too, that the police would be like, you two need to separate for a day. Like,
But they did. And that's all on camera, too. So it's not like it's just an allegation that they said that. They fucking said that.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of weird. Like, let's just separate for the night and calm down.
I know.
I don't know. I've never been in that close proximity to someone for that long because, you know, there's no getting away, which would drive me insane.
Yeah.
To be with somebody that closely for that amount of time. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, I read today, like, one of the officers, like, I feel bad for them because they didn't know what they had encountered, really. You know, because I think it was handled wrong. But when you know how it ended, it was handled horribly wrong.
Yeah.
But you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, is probably like, you know, oh, she's being hysterical, typical girl. And, you know, and he's coming across as calm and
you gotta, collected. Yeah. And you got to look at it as, okay, so you can argue the point of why didn't they do more to protect her? Why didn't they, especially, but she even said while she was there that she admitted to, you know, scratching him too. So, yeah. So you have this situation where both are kind of like, we're both at fault. And you got to think the officers, how many times do they go through this in a day?
But there was a 911 call from someone else who had called in because they saw him hitting her.
Yeah, no, that's
and
different.
I don't
yes,
know if that never made it to the police.
I'm gonna guess no. I mean, if you have someone saying in evidence that other people claiming there's abuse, I'm gonna hope to God that those officers were not aware of that, because if they were aware of that and still let this happen, then that's fucking bullshit. But
yeah, because I mean, that's pretty bad. Like, I would call 911 if I saw a guy hitting a woman on
course.
The street. Absolutely.
I've done it. I've called 911 for that before. I guess the situation is when you look at the officers and they're trying to figure this out and deal with it, and both seem to be like openly admitting they're both at fault because they did on camera, both did. I don't know what else you should be doing at that point. I mean, do you arrest? You'd be arresting everyone no matter what.
Right.
If you were to say they should have done something at that point, well, sure, okay. Then every single domestic case, no matter what, everyone's going to jail.
I think she downplayed a lot of it.
Yeah.
She was very upset, but I think she was, you know, I don't.
Yeah.
Because she didn't come out and be like, he was hitting me on the street.
And I feel horrible for her because she probably felt intimidated and felt like she couldn't do it. So, I mean, it's not like, why didn't you do it? You know, when I get it. It's something when you're in that situation, it's not an easy thing to do.
No.
But I think the officer was trying to use his best judgment. And, you know, I mean, were there times where I felt he was way too, like, bro with the guy? Yes. There was plenty where it's like, I get you, yeah, bitches be tripping.
We know how those girls are.
Not that he said bitches be tripping, but it was so, you know, it was like kind of like that. And I was just like, yeah. So I think there was too much of that going on, but there should have been a little bit more investigation going on in this thing and not so much just like surface looking at this and let's get the fuck out of here. Because it kind of felt like, okay, we're here. Let's get the fuck out of here. I think if they had the opportunity to dig a little bit deeper, maybe other choices could have been made.
Yeah.
But,
you know, it's just tough. And you know, for those police officers to be like, God, you know.
Yeah.
Because you don't get a do-over. And,
no, and it's far easier.
And they could have made different decisions that day that could have really changed that out. She could still be alive.
Sure.
And he could still be alive. Actually, he might not have. I'm assuming he killed himself, but that might not have happened.
Yeah,
that's a lot. That's a lot to deal with.
I mean, there's two roads that can go down with it. You can go down the road going, well, we should just fire them and ban them from ever being police officers because they clearly are not capable of making good decisions. Or we can go, maybe they just made bad decisions that day. And
maybe you should look at your training.
Maybe we should look
too.
At the training. Maybe we should look at how we train these people to react to situations like that, because they did, according to everything, follow the policies, and they did according to the policies. Maybe not the policies that you set up or I set up or this set up, but according to their job, they did. And that's where we should look at those policies. And
Absolutely.
The thing is, a lot of these guys, I mean, I you know, are there bad officers? Sure. But there's a lot of people get thrown into horrible fucking situations and make bad choices out of reaction. And half the time it's like, well, I challenge many others not to also, you know, not make a bad choice at some point in time when you're dealing with this how many times a day, you know? So.
Yeah, it's tough.
It is. It is. Let's go to our next story. a body of a missing Florida man, a hero of the state of, body of missing Florida man, a hero of the state's LGBTQ rights movement, is discovered in a landfill. This is a fucked up one. Authorities in Tallahassee, Florida, are investigating the death of a 54-year-old man whose body was found in a landfill hours after he'd been reported missing. A statement from Tallahassee police confirms that detectives are handling the death of George Diaz Johnston as a homicide. Diaz Johnston was last seen alive on January 3rd. Missing persons alert was issued on January 8th. The same morning, Diaz Johnston's remains were discovered at the Spring Hill Landfill in Clampleton, more than an hour away from Tallahassee. According to the statement, the body was found in a trash pile that had come from a public area at the landfill in Baker, which is located 2 hours from where Diaz Johnston was last seen. The body was formally identified on Wednesday. According to the Tallahassee Democrat, Diaz Johnston was a plaintiff in a historic lawsuit that led to the legislation of same-sex marriages in Miami-Dade County. The lawsuit, the paper reports, was initiated in 2014 when the victim and his husband, Don Diaz Johnston, sued the county clerk's office along with 5 other same-sex couples. The 6 couples had been denied marriage licenses by the clerk's office. Leave it to Florida. That year, the judge ruled in favor of plaintiffs, and a year later, Florida became the 36th state to allow gay couples to wed. George was a crucial part in this historic lawsuit. That's one of the biggest moments in the LGBTQ civil rights movement in Florida's history. Stratton Pulitzer, deputy director of Equity Florida, the state's leading gay rights group, told the paper, "It's incomprehensible to hear that one of our heroes had been taken from us." D.S. Johnston was a secret doctoral student of religion at Florida State University. His brother, Manny Diaz, is a former mayor of Miami and the new chair of the Florida Democratic Party. Detectives urge anyone who may have information to call them, 850-891-4200.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
Like, what a horrible ending to a really impactful life.
Yeah.
And then, so did they, do you suppose they thought he might be there, so they were looking for him, or was it they just maybe dumped, or they were moving the trash around like they do to kind of compact it down, and they saw it?
I think it was a connect the dots situation where, okay, man missing, we found body over here, we identify body, it's that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to, I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it. I mean, we know nothing about the crime yet. That's the thing. We don't know a motive. You know, is this a hate crime? I mean, possibly, you know, that's an easy motive to go to, but we just don't know yet, you know, until, you know, is there an enemy? Is there something else going on? I mean, you know, there's obviously other feuds that can go on in one's life beyond that. But it's just hard to know at this point.
Man, that's tough.
Yeah. A guy who really made a big difference.
I feel just bad, so bad for his family and friends to have to live with that.
Yeah.
You know?
You're going to wait waiting
so
for the answers.
So many questions, and you don't have the answers, and hopefully they will get some answers. Well, but when you do get answers, doesn't make anything any better.
Well, and the interesting thing here, this is, I mean, what is, it's the brother of the... What is his position? I don't have it in front of me.
He was the head of the Democratic Party in Florida.
Kind
of
connected.
He was the mayor.
Yeah, a little bit connected. You know, I'm not saying the bad things, but, you know, connected to people in general. I mean, so it's like, is this something where is it like a, you know, is it a hit or something that has more to do with his brother? You know, like a, I mean, I don't know. I'm thinking like, you know, Sopranos style where it's like, you don't do what we want, we're going to harm your family or something. I don't know.
It's just so hard to tell. So hard to tell.
Though obviously, hopefully, be more on this. You know, it's essentially an unsolved mystery right now. Let's go to our next story. A Texas girl's abduction inspired the life-saving Amber Alert, but here we are 26 years later, and her own case, it still remains unsolved. I remember when we went to Amber Alerts. I remember like when that kind of started. It was like right when I started.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah. Texas girls. Okay, so let's go into the story. On January 13th, 1996, a 9-year-old Amber Hagerman was riding her pink bicycle. It's 26 years ago. Holy shit. I'm just looking at the date and like, my God. Wow. That's the year I started in radio. Her pink bicycle beside her younger brother, Ricky, in a parking lot of an abandoned Winn-Dixie grocery store. Ricky decided to pedal back to his grandparents' Arlington, Texas home. But before Amber could join him, a man driving a black pickup truck snatched her off her bicycle, put her inside the driver's side door, and took off. An elderly man who witnessed the abduction from his backyard told police he saw the 1980s or 90s truck parked earlier at a nearby laundromat store. The assailant drove by, kidnapped Amber, and drove towards the center of Arlington away from nearby Highway 360. 4 days later, a man walking his dog found Amber's body near a creek about 4 miles from the parking lot where she was taken. Police believe the suspect, who was described as a white or Hispanic male in his 20s or 30s, under 6 feet with dark hair, was a local. Based on the direction of travel when they left the Winn-Dixie and then based on being found in Arlington, being abducted in Arlington and just being in that spot, the question has always been, did somebody have a connection with that area where the abduction was? Arlington Police Sergeant Grant Gildon tells people in that issue, it's a very secluded area where the body was found. We do believe you'd have to be somewhat familiar with the area to know where that creek is, he says. Amber's murder sent anguish and anger through the community and beyond Texas. A Texas mom, Diana Simone, couldn't stop thinking about how a kidnapper snatched Amber and escaped without a trace. I said, I can't get over this child. There's been something we can do, Simone told people. There were weather and civil defense alerts, so why wouldn't they do this? Simone called a local radio station with her idea of an emergency system that would be set up when a 911 call was placed. Radio stations would immediately interrupt programming to broadcast the alert. 14 days after Amber's abduction, she wrote a letter to a station requesting that if her alert system was put into place, it would be known as Amber's Plan. The plan, renamed the Amber America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response Alert, was put into place that very same year. Today, Amber Alerts are used in all 50 states, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, 33 countries. To date, they have saved almost 1,085 children in the U.S., according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Without people caring and willing to participate, I don't care how good of an idea it is, it would have gone nowhere, says Simone. It's the goodness in the hearts of people who care that are making the difference. Shockingly, despite the far-reaching impact of Amber's case and despite the over 7,000 tips, her killer remains at large 26 years later. It's kind of amazing that it's interesting to hear the history of something that, I mean, almost feels so new. I mean, but it's 26 years old. I guess it depends on your age where the feel of it comes, but it is something that, didn't exist for, quite some time, but it really has. I mean, how many times do we see that where it comes across now? It used to be on the radio where we would get the alert and boom, it interrupts programming. But now we have it on our smartphones and our Alexas and everything else. And I can't tell you how many times I see the alert and then maybe 45, 50 minutes later, alert canceled, child has been found. And that's amazing.
Well, what I found amazing about that story was that, number one, I didn't realize that they had never found the person, but that they were able to implement it that fast.
Yeah.
Because I swear now, like, if you were to come up with that idea, you hear, like, it takes forever to do something. And when you think about how widespread they implemented that, it wasn't just like their radio station was going to do it. It was implemented all over the country.
I started in fall in radio in 96. Her abduction was in spring, in January of 96. And by fall, we were starting to do it. I remember we got the box because we had to upgrade our EAS, or it wasn't EAS at the time. What was it called? It was before EAS. There was another name for it. And we upgraded the box to EAS, and that had the amber thing on it. And these are literally, for those of us playing along at home, boxes that sit on a rack that hook into your radio station board. This is before computers on most stuff. And if the government sends a signal to your radio station, or the receive, whatever the technicalities, we won't get into it, sends a signal to your station, boom, it takes over your signal and pushes out the recorded voice. This is an emergency alert message. And then you hear the before that, before that was the beep, before that was just the tone. And then they changed it to that annoying buzzing thing.
And that just comes over top of whatever you're doing.
Yes.
I mean, and you legally are required to do that. And that's why I think it's so great that now the same thing with Amber. It just, it comes over like you can be, and it's happened to me. I'm talking on the air and all of a sudden that just comes over top of what I'm saying. And and I love that it's on people's phones now.
That's the most powerful thing, I think.
Like, there was one a while back that happened in Oklahoma, and they thought they were coming north on I-35. And so, I mean, think of all those people that are on I-35 right when that happened.
Yeah.
And then all the towns along there, all those people got that.
Yeah.
All those people were able to see that.
And yeah, with the
I think it's amazing.
With the advent of all the cell phones and all that, it makes it so much more powerful.
It's one of those things that, you know, is that story is horribly tragic and it's sad, but yet something really positive came of that.
Yeah.
I just wish they could find the son of a bitch who did it.
Yeah, I agree. But that's an amazing example of a mom who said, this is not going to be done in vain. Like, even if we don't get her back, something's going to happen here to prevent this. And that's amazing. I have an interesting EAS story, or emergency alert system story for you. Because it all depends for everyone out there who understands it. Back in the day, you had one station in a market, meaning your city, that was your chief station, basically, for the emergency alert system. It would come to them. They had to be staffed 24/7. And then it was the operator of that station, meaning usually the DJ on the air, of deciding, okay, this alert's coming through. Do we press it on our air button so then it feeds out to all of the other stations? It's kind of like a second, you know, check just to make sure if there's an accident coming through that somebody doesn't say, yeah, put that through, because that does happen. Anyway, we were the chief station. and do you remember, this is just a test of the emergency broadcast system. That was the original one.
Right.
This is only a test. There's many stations back in the day, and today especially, where the one station that presses the button to issue it, it then goes out across all of the stations. Every station in the fucking market gets it. It used to be the other stations could choose their time once it was issued, but most people don't have anybody living in the buildings. So it just goes across the airwaves whenever somebody presses the button. And what we would do, because we were the only, like, one of the live stations in the market, and we knew the other stations didn't have anybody there to, like, do it, so we would override whatever they were doing. We'd wait for, like, their, like, promotion of the day or whatever was, like, the big point of the day where it's like, oh, especially, like, in the ratings periods, where it's like, okay, we know, like, they're going to do this at this time. It's like if they're going to say the keyword or some bullshit. And
we wasn't at 4:10 for the word of the day.
And what we would do is we would issue the EAS
at that time. So it would immediately, right when they're about to do it, is run the EAS over everything.
I had no idea that you had that kind of power.
If you're the, I think it's the F1 or M, it's something one station. I don't know what it is. But if you're that station, it all depends on your market and how they're set up. Stations do have the choice of when they want to run it. But if you're not live, if you're no one in the studio at those hours, you're technically supposed to set it up so it just runs by itself. Because otherwise, you need a body there to say, yep, play.
I love it.
Yeah. So that's the sort of shit I used to do.
That's pretty funny.
I love podcasting because I can share all these stories now, and it's great. All right. That's going to wrap up today's episode of Dark Side of. If you like the show, keep us on the air and become a supporter of us over at patreon.com. Search Dark Side of. You become a Dark Sider, or go to darksidepod.com. Get access to all the episodes in advance of their release, as well as the whole archive, all commercial free. Binge away on all the insanity of the world when you need to go, my life really isn't that bad. You can just do it right there. No ads. It makes it so much easier. And our lovely, colorful commentary as well. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of.